Serafina's Stories, Chapter 3, page 21. When Serafina finished the story, the governor sighed with satisfaction. He had heard the story before. It was part of the repertoire of folk tales of the people. To New Mexicans, the adventures of Juan del Oso were well known. But he had never heard tales from such a spellbinding storyteller. Her tone, the rhythms in her voice and her presence had allowed his mind to drift into the story. He felt he was there with Juan as he rescued the three princesses from their entrapment. Storytelling was the principal entertainment for New Mexican families. Reciting cuentos from the vast storehouse of folk tales was an art in which Serafina excelled. As he listened to her, he felt the burdensome responsibility of being governor lifted. His eyelids had grown heavy as he relaxed and let his imagination carry him to the final scene at the castle. "Very good," he muttered. "Very good. You have a gift for storytelling." He stood, went to the door, and called the guard. "Gaspar," he said to the young man. "Take the prison." He paused. "Return Serafina to the stockade." "Yes, Your Excellency," replied the guard. He led her out of the room, leaving a very relaxed governor, thinking how much he'd enjoyed the story. He stumbled to his bed and slept a peaceful sleep. The next morning, the crowing of a rooster awakened the governor. He got up and stretched and looked around him. "What a wonderful sleep," he said. Page 22. He recalled the events of the previous night. The Indian girl Serafina was a delightful storyteller. He hadn't slept so soundly in months. Smiling and humming a simple tune, he washed and dressed, then ate his breakfast. He ate like a bear after a long winter's sleep. He then went out to attend the day's business. Already the prisoners were lined up under the portal. Don Alfonso, the secretary, had set up a small table on the frozen ground to record the proceedings. The officers stood nearby. Behind the prisoners, it seemed the entire villa of Santa Fe had gathered to watch. The men stamped their feet on the frozen earth, the women pulling their tapalos tightly around their heads. The governor said good morning to his officers and sat next to Don Alfonso. It was a bright and sunny day on the high plateau of Santa Fe. By noon, the sun's warmth would lift the spirits of the paisanos. Women could wash and hang clothes out to dry. The men could replenish wood piles. "I have made a list of the prisoners in the order they will be tried," whispered Don Alfonso to the governor. "Thank you," said the governor, looking at the list. "Place the girl at the end." He looked at the prisoners until his eyes rested on Serafina. The wager! He had promised to free the man on trial if her story pleased him. Now her gaze held his. "Will you keep her promise?" her eyes seemed to ask. But it was a silly bet. Surely he couldn't set one of the rebels free. There was a group of residents within the villa that didn't agree with his administration. They were friends of the governor that he had replaced, a very wicked man. These enemies would call for his resignation if he set a prisoner free. But the girl had won the bet. She had told a story that had not only entertained him, but also brought a welcome rest. Page 23. And there was the matter of honor. A Spaniard's word was his honor, and he had given his word. But he hadn't expected to lose. He had laughed at her when she said she would trade a story for the freedom of one of the prisoners. "Your Excellency," the secretary whispered, breaking the spell that held the governor, "it's time to proceed with the trial. Shall I read the charges?" The governor nodded. "Will the prisoner known as Pope come forward?" said the secretary. A dark, stocky man of about 40 stepped out of the line. "This man currently resides in the Pueblo of Taos. He is a known rabble-rouser. Capitan Marquez will act as his attorney, but there is little defense to be offered. All 12 have been charged with plotting insurrection." The governor did not respond. He had returned his gaze to Serafina. The secretary continued, turning to the captain who had been appointed to offer a defense for the prisoners. "What say you, Capitan Marquez?" Capitan Marquez cleared his throat and stepped forward. I, Capitan Horacio Gomez Marquez, assigned to be guardian and defense attorney for the Indians, come to beg for clemency from your excellency. I have explained the charges against the prisoners through the interpreter, which I am sure the prisoner speaks, or at least understands, the Castilian language quite well. I have asked the prisoner to call witnesses on his behalf. He replies that he has no witnesses to call. Here Capitan Marquez paused and looked in the direction of a group of Pueblo Indians huddled against a wall by the south side of the plaza. They had been allowed to enter the villa to... Page 24. Witness the trial, so that they could report the results of Spanish justice back to their pueblos. It was not unusual for men from the various pueblos to come in and out of the villa during the day. Some came to trade, some to work for Fray Tomas at the church, some to see their wives who worked in the homes of the Españoles. Capitán Marquez spoke. The pueblos have sent representatives to report back to their elders, but none has stepped forward to testify for the prisoner. The governor cleared his throat. He had followed the gaze of the capitán. Well, if they have no witnesses in their defense, how does the man plead? Capitán Marquez remained silent for a moment. He had been assigned to defend the Indians, but they had been uncooperative. They claimed to have met as a group to discuss grievances that they proposed to forward to the governor. Well, I have little to say in defense of the prisoner. He is a known leader of those who speak of insurrection. According to our informant, who cannot be identified for his own safety, this group has gathered to plot an attack on our settlement. How reliable is this information? Asked the governor. As you know, Your Excellency, sometimes the information is true, but sometimes it is grounded in heresy or jealousies or family feuds. One can never be sure. Very well. Continue, said the governor. Well, the natives complain that we have taken much corn and many blankets from them. They say they are suffering from the severe cold. If this can be proven to be true, and they assembled simply to petition the governor, then I can only ask that your lordship show clemency. Some in the crowd nodded. Others shook their head. Show no pity, a man shouted. Page 25. Murmurs of dissent broke out. How would I show clemency? Asked the governor, raising his hand to quiet the crowd. At best, don't banish the man to Mexico. Make him work in servitude for a year here in the villa. Again, some in the crowd raised their voices. Yes, a year's hard labor might cleanse thoughts of revolution from the prisoner. The governor looked at Serafina. Her bright eyes again reminded him of their wager. For a moment he felt confused. Had he really lost the bet last night? As I understand, said the governor, the evidence against this man is based on hearsay. It is the word of our informant against his. Is that true? Capitán Marquez nodded. That is true, Your Excellency. Then what would be the greatest clemency we could offer the prisoner? The captain looked surprised. I suppose it would be freedom, allowing him to go back to his pueblos with a stern warning. Voices in the crowd rose to agree with that solution. A minority shouted no. The prisoner must be made an example. He must be punished. Having offered the only defense he could muster, Capitán Marquez stepped back. The secretary cleared his throat and spoke. That concludes the presentation of evidence, Your Excellency. You must pass sentence. The governor looked at his secretary and nodded. Pass sentence? Exile the man to the mines of Zacatecas? Separate him forever from his family? Or let him go. Had the girl tricked him into the bet? No, she was a child, no older than 15. He had entered the transaction of his own accord. Page 26. To free the man would be looked on as an act of mercy. That was what was needed most in the relations between the Indian and the Spaniards, an act of mercy. We must be merciful, the governor muttered. The secretary thought he hadn't heard correctly. Standing next to him, Fray Tomas nodded.
Merciful? The secretary repeated.
Yes. I conclude the charges against this man have not been proven. As Capitan Marquez states, the charges are based on hearsay. I say we must set this man free.
He looked at Serafina, and thought he saw a smile cross her lips. Some in the crowd nodded their assent. Yes, mercy should be shown. The governor was right. In this way, the natives would learn that there was forgiveness in the hearts of the Spanish settlers. Others in the crowd disagreed. This was a time to punish those who plotted the overthrow of the colony. Mercy, bah! That would only show weakness.
I'm afraid I don't understand, muttered the secretary. Are you saying free the prisoner?
The governor stood.
Yes, free the prisoner.
But, governor, one of the captains protested, the man is a rebel. He's accused of planning our downfall.
I am sure there are many who speak against the law, the rule of law, the governor responded. Are we to banish every Pueblo man from this land because he expresses his opinion? If I had evidence there was an actual plot that threatened the colony, I would be the first to stamp it out, and, yes, punish the perpetrators. But in this case, the evidence is lacking. The governor leaned and whispered to the secretary. As for the other eleven prisoners, see that they are fed and allowed to bathe. Have Doña Ofelia send the girl a clean dress to wear.
27. The governor turned smartly and disappeared into his residence, leaving behind him the citizens of the villa arguing over his decision. The prisoner, cut loose from his shackles, went quickly to his countrymen, who had come to observe the trial. As a group, they quietly disappeared through one of the gates leading out of the plaza. Soon all of the northern pueblos would know what had happened that morning. As for the residents of the villa, they would argue all day and deep into the night, debating the governor's verdict. Some argued that it was a good gesture of friendship toward their neighbors. Others saw it as an expression of weakness. Still others thought the governor had gone out of his mind. All asked, what will he do tomorrow when the second prisoner is tried? The governor paid no attention to the turmoil he had created. He went about his business with renewed energy, inspecting the troops, and in the afternoon supervising the cleaning of the horse corrals. That evening he ate a hearty supper, read the secretary's proceedings of the trial, then thought of going to bed. But he wasn't sleepy. When the spring caravans traveled south, the viceroy would learn that he had freed the prisoners. The governor had his enemies, not only in Santa Fe, but in Mexico City. A pox on my enemies, he thought. I did what I thought was right. The girl, he thought. Last night's story had been such a delight. Did he dare tempt fate again? Why not? Listening to a story was far preferable to sitting in his office and reading the adventures of Don Quixote late into the night. He rose, lit a candle, and made his way to the office. Gaspar, the sentry, stood guard outside. The governor instructed him to bring the girl to the office. Page 28. The storyteller, the young guard said. The night before, he had listened at the door and heard this girl telling the story of Juan del Oso. Yes, the storyteller, the governor said. Minutes later, when the guard led Serafina into his office, the governor was astounded by her beauty. She wore a white cotton dress, and her long black hair shimmered as it fell over the clean wool blanket that Doña Ofelia had provided. For a moment, she reminded him of his wife, a woman of dark complexion with black hair. With a twinge of sadness, he thought of their life together and the children they had never had. Thank you, Gaspar, said the governor, dismissing the guard. Come in by the fire, he said to Serafina, and drew her into the room and to a chair near the huge fireplace. Have you been treated well? He asked.
Yes, Your Excellency. Doña Ofelia is very kind.
It's late. Did I disturb your sleep?
No, Your Excellency. The sun has just set. It isn't late.
Here the entire villa goes to sleep after dinner. Perhaps it's different in your pueblo.
"We also follow the rhythms of the sun," replied Serafina.
"Well, candles are expensive," said the governor, motioning toward the candles that provided light in his office.
"Thank you for releasing the prisoner," she said.
"Yes, well, we made a bargain. I kept my word. Besides, there are certain political advantages to be gained from my action, and your story was like a good medicine I needed. But the medicine doesn't last."
"Perhaps you need another story," Serafina said.
"And the wager is the same?"
"Yes.
If the story pleases you, you free a prisoner?" The governor smiled. Perhaps it was not the magic of the young woman's storytelling that had allowed him to rest last night. Page 29. Perhaps he had already decided to release the first prisoner to help bind the wounds between the Spanish settlers and the natives. Well, tonight he would find out.
"Very well," he said.
He took the large chair opposite her, and Serafina began her story.